this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Wheeler, it's always good to see old friends. Not talking about you.
I knew you weren't talking about me.
But our guest on this episode.
Yes, he's been here before, and he actually came back, which is always good when somebody takes the invite again. speaking of, though, of old friends, I feel like we're really getting to know the people at Manhattan Beer Project very well. They're going to start charging us rent here at some point.
Speaking of having us back, I'm very thankful they have us back here. Manhattan Project Beer Company on the west side of downtown Dallas. Fantastic. I get the same thing all the time.
I know.
It's the necessary evil, and you get a fruity beer,
whatever they've got on the menu.
Whatever fruity beer they have is what you order every time. But our episode this week is something that is very much on the minds of probably every mayor's office, every county judge office, every city council across the state of Texas.
Even in the legislature, too, I would think.
Right.
And what I love about this is there's this blueprint that's been put together for Texas, and it's called the Texas Metropolitan Blueprint, in fact. And what I love about this is that they sort of, you know, they get these nonpartisans, they get a bunch of Republicans, they get a bunch of Democrats, and they sort of put them all into this burlap sack together say, hey, you know, we're going to shake this up. You guys fight it out a little bit, discuss, debate, come to a consensus. And they do. They come to a consensus on ideas that can actually help this state move forward, because not everybody lives their lives or handles their business the way I do, where, you know, you just sort of make it up.
Thankfully.
You very much make it up as you go along. It's fly by the seat of your pants. Yes. You don't really have a plan. Because to have sustained growth, you've got to be deliberative about this. You've got to have a plan. You've got to have a blueprint.
And that's what's fascinating. So Stephen Pettigo from the University of Texas at Austin is one of the key guys in this bag, if you will.
Yeah.
But he has
sort of refereeing it in a way.
He is, and he's put together this blueprint with other colleagues from across the state, as he's going to explain in just a moment. This is the blueprint that he thinks Texas cities have to look at for the next decade and the next decade after that. If the Texas miracle will be sustained, it's going to be because of these ideas. Mm-hmm. And as he mentions, this is not just something that they've come up with. Other politicians, the governor's office, have come up with similar things. We're talking about economic development, AI, water, infrastructure. There's a lot of stuff involved here in order to keep Texas on the fast track, being the fastest growing state in the country.
Yeah, not only keeping it going, but also potentially making it better. Like maybe things that you haven't even thought of. I mean, we all sit in traffic and complain about sitting in traffic. You know, they're looking at those things too and thinking, you know, how can we actually make quality of life better here, not just sustain what we have right now?
Yeah. Stephen Pettigo, and he's going to kill me for not knowing the exact title.
He's the director of the LBJ Urban Lab.
See, Wheeler prepares himself.
See, I'm telling you.
He would say that he doesn't prepare himself, but he's
always
prepared.
He's also the assistant dean or associate dean for Faculty of Practice and Policy Engagement there. So,
and
I do my research.
And he has a much better haircut than Wheeler.
He does have a cool haircut.
Stephen Pettigo, everybody.
So, Stephen, thanks so much for being back with us here on Y'allitics, a return guest. And we're talking about something similar to the last time we had you on, except more detailed and looking into the future now.
Yeah, I should be hosting this damn thing, right? I've been on.
You have the cool podcast haircut too, man. Well, I like the summer cut there.
And Stephen, anytime you'd like to host, I will gladly give up my spot here and let you take over.
Here's my mic as well, my friend. Let me know when you want to come in.
I don't have the fanciness that y'all have, Dave. So, So I mean, obviously, you know, the work I do is kind of in the city and urban space. I think the last time I was on with you, I think we talked about childcare a little bit,
sure.
And dive into childcare. Interestingly enough, it's interesting to see some of the things that we talked about, the ledge actually moving on a little bit. But the Metro Blueprint is, I think, a pretty cool project, partly because it does something that universities don't do a lot. And as we collaborated with a group of folk, a set of universities across the state of Texas. So this wasn't a University of Texas piece at the LBJ school. We did some really fun work with our friends at the Hobby School, the University of Houston at the Hobby School.
That's my alma mater there.
Yeah. First time I've actually got to do some work with Pablo and Renee there. They're building a really great program, so we had some opportunity to do the work with them. They're an interesting group because they also do some really cool polling work, which we were able to kind of tap in and think about a little bit. And then our other partner was the George W. Bush Institute at SMU, the Presidential Center there. My good friend Colin Clark and I were able to collaborate and do some work together on this as well. So yeah, so it was cool, multi-collaborative amongst many institutions. Couple other things about it, and I won't go on much longer, but we had a steering committee and we did some focus groups. All 26 metropolitan areas in the state of Texas, there are 26 of them in our state, were represented in our work, which I think is pretty fun and pretty cool. In addition to that, I think you read the piece and you find that it's a pretty bipartisan piece. It's not overly one way or the other. I think it just sets forth what we think are kind of some issues that we should be thinking about for growth for Texas and Texas metros and cities.
And Stephen, talk about the genesis of this, whose idea it was, why you guys decided to put it together, because I've heard, you know, over the last 25 years, the Texas miracle will be at stake if we don't do X, Y, or Z over the next decade. What was the reason you guys put this blueprint together, and who is it for?
Yeah, good question. So we, you know, one of the cool things is that this is a 2.0 version of that. So, you know, this is a blueprint that we went back and updated. We did the first one. 2019, when I first got to LBJ after coming back for moving back to Austin, and it was really kind of just focus on the Texas legislature, right? Here are the things that the leg should do. And I think what we found, just the realization of that is that to really have an impact on our cities and municipalities, you can't just depend on the legislature. There are issues that really matter both at the city level, the local level, you know, at the state ledge for sure, but also with our private and philanthropic leaders. So it was the idea that we should be thinking much more comprehensively about the way we're thinking about our cities and metros, and doing it at a way to think about how we could target both local and state leaders. And I think if you look at the report, what you'll find is we offer recommendations that are both centric for things that localities would activate on and things that we call in the private sector to kind of jump up to the plate as well, but also the legislature. You know, Jason, your point is really well taken. I mean, you know, we've been the Texas miracle for a while. You know, when I first came back to Texas in 2019 with some of the lowest housing costs in the country, you know, the affordability argument was alive and well. It was come to Texas, low cost, no income tax, affordability. And a lot of people did it, right? I mean, the state has done a really good job on attracting residents, about 1,000 new residents every day. And that's put pressures on cities. And so, you know, we are, by definition, an urban state. I say that because I say it out loud all the time and people don't really buy that argument, but we really are. More people live in metropolitan areas in Texas than, frankly, a lot of other places across the country. And, you know, 9 in 10 of us do. And we've really got to take, I think, a real hard look at how do you maintain that competitiveness? Because, frankly, the Texas Miracle Edge, which was low cost has happened. But it's also just put lots of pressures where that's not really an advantage. That's not an advantage anymore.
You know, one of the things that really stood out to me, you know, in speaking about that is you all, you know, looked at homes and rents. And, I just did a money report on this not long ago, that those costs to live here have more than doubled in the Texas metros since 2010, even though incomes have only gone up by 45% or so. So a real drop off there. And the question is, how do you fix that? And you all are trying to get down into the weeds on that and talking about, you know, giving people new skills, upskilling, reskilling, because we keep on seeing these corporate headquarters moving to Texas and bringing all of these jobs. We see these chips manufacturers coming in. The issue is, will we have enough people in a skilled workforce to meet the demands of all of those places that are relocating here?
So Wheeler, you're talking my magic. There are so many things to think about here. First and foremost, you know, addressing the cost advantage and the cost challenge and the affordability challenge in Texas only through property taxes is never going to happen, right? I mean, it's a nice to have, but it is a singular policy action, right? And frankly, a significant number of fellow Texans are not even homeowners, right? They're renters. And so they're not even really overly impacted by the advantage that comes here. So we got to think much more comprehensively about what we're doing. And so in our report, we kind of talk about some levers to do that. Let's start with the first one, which you hit on really, really great. And that is workforce development. This is a state, we are a state that's done really good job of attracting tons of different folks here, right? So you name a headline or name a corporate brand and they probably are, they're thinking or they've expanded here in Texas. Stock it. The idea of the CHIPS Act, right? Look at what's happened with the state of, you know, the federal government investing in the CHIPS Act, Texas developing its own. The problem with that is that if you don't have the skills to participate, you're kind of sitting on the sidelines. So one of the things that we have to do better in the state of Texas is workforce development. And our Texas Workforce Commission, you know, is, it's, if you think about what the Workforce Commission does, it does two things. It looks at, it dishes out unemployment benefits and it administers child care dollars. That's not a modern workforce function, frankly. A modern workforce function has got to think through how do we match our economic development options with our workforce development initiatives. And so there is
Give me an example of that, though. That's interesting. But what's an example of that?
Well, I mean, I think it's like, so for instance, let's talk about the CHIPS Act. How do we get, what's the right type of skill programs together? How do you get ACC together and your workforce and your private partners together to think, what's a really quick training program? And then how do you connect it to your high school programs, right?
And ACC is Austin Community College.
Yeah, Jason, we're, you know, another example, I just recently did some work with the mayor here in Austin, Kirk Watson, and we were spending time thinking about the Austin Infrastructure Academy. Austin's going to spend $25 billion worth of infrastructure. That's great. Who gets to benefit from it? Well, if you don't have the up training and the skill trades, mobility, et cetera, well, you're not really getting to do it except for maybe some of the crummy, just basic construction jobs. So how do we upskill to get people into those jobs? So what I'm trying to get at is we're creating these economic development opportunities. And unless you have, you know, unless you have the skills, which are the tickets to participate, then you don't get to, you don't get to engage in those jobs. And I think seen around community college reform, for instance, and outcome measurements, I think that's moving us in the right direction. But we got to do, we got to double down on that more and more, because you don't just address housing affordability and the cost of living on dealing with the issues of housing and transit costs and others. You got, there's got to be an income, there's got to be an income lever that you move, that you pull there. And that income lever, to Jason's point, if we want to increase salaries, wages, and all that jazz, you've got to also make people better skills, because they got to be, they got to be able to take some of those jobs that are being created here in the state.
Stephen, you're also prodding the locals, though, to, hey, you know, you guys need to, you know, relax some of these restrictions when it comes to building homes, because we're going to need, you know, something like 5 million, maybe 5.5 million more housing units net by 2050. That's going to be here before we know it. And that is a huge number of homes just to keep up with the population growth.
And a lot of people to build them, too, right? I mean, there's that people piece of it as well, right? So, yeah, look, I mean, you know, the idea, the way that we've approached housing development in the state of Texas from a long time of just kind of single family development, only thinking about that, lot sizes, our permitting processes, you know, all have been an old school way of thinking about development, right? I mean, and to your point, because the market, because we need to essentially flood the market, so to speak, or create more supply, we've got to do some things a little bit more innovative in that sense. And you know, I think there are some pretty good examples of that, right? I mean, look, I mean, not to, I live in Austin, so Austin's my life. I mean, not my life, but it is the context I have. I think if you look at some of the things that that our city's done recently, you know, we've taken on parking minimums. We've done some stuff around the home initiative to put some more density in the urban core. We've been okay with accessory ADU units. Those are things that I think have changed the, have started to change the narrative about housing affordability in Austin. And those are also things that I think the legislature is going to think about as well. I will say this, though. I'm a big believer in local control. I just want to be very clear about that. That's in the report. That's the that's a little small C conservative in me about the idea that I still think that government closest to the people get to make the decisions. The way we think about the housing affordability challenges in Wichita Falls, for instance, way different than Fort Worth, Texas, and or Dallas, or you know, Beaumont, where I grew up. And so a top-down approach, I don't necessarily think works. But what I think that the state could do, and we write about this in the report, is incentivize that. Let's incentivize you to explore how to rethink about your permitting process. Let's incentivize you to think about how we think about how you are are you going to do 80 units or lot sizes or those types of things? I think we've got to more carrot, less stick. I think we'll get us to the results that we want and allow residents to still have a little bit of say in what they're doing.
Local control is a dirty word down in Austin, man.
It is. I'm a big believer
It
in it,
used
though.
to be the motto.
But you know what, Jason? You talked about the secret sauce, man. I think that is the secret sauce for who we are, right? I mean, so much of what we've done and successful about Texas has been the idea, I truly believe this as someone that does economic development, is that the idea that we've been able to tailor initiatives and ideas that are very specific to our locality needs has been what's been it's been it has been the Texas miracle. Texas miracle isn't just the largest Texas piece. It's the fact that we've been able to put these things together in kind of a Lego set to be able to do it. A few weeks.
Let
Go
me ask
ahead.
about this real quick, Stephen. Under the economic development tab on the blueprint here, you mentioned this a moment ago, workforce development. If you go down to the roots of workforce development, it's all about education. Companies don't want to move to a state if the education system
Totally.
is not
Don't ask me about vouchers,
set
please.
up to succeed. I'm not going to ask you about that. But then you go on down and you say too, leverage international business and trade. Well, both of those, workforce development slash schools, and then leveraging international development or business and trade, those are mired deep in politics, federal politics right now with President Trump. What can the legislature and Governor Abbott and Lieutenant Governor do to
Down of the
really
way, down
lead?
of the way, right? I mean, so here's the thing, right? We know that, so stay out of the way, but also be supportive. So Reese, I will say this. The state of Texas, by the way, Governor Abbott's office, the Texas Economic Development Office, just released their blueprint. They have a blueprint, an economic development blueprint. It was just released. You guys should have them on to talk about it. Interesting enough, a lot of the things that we write about in our report, they are also saying they want to double down on trade as well. They want to double down on the fact that we are a place that is thinking about energy and the new tech, new kind of phases of energy. I think the thing that we write about in the report, and we say this, is that, and this is my whole thing about local control a little bit, or local control and the idea that the small to see localism has made it really work, is that when you look at like places like Houston's a great example of where local innovation has played an important role to reimagine what economic development can be for that town. Traditionally, we think of oil companies, professional development, et cetera. But man, if you talk to the people at the Greater Houston Partnership around the Energy Transition Initiative, and we're talking big companies, I'm not talking small companies, I'm talking like the BPs of the world, they're all in on this idea of clean technology and carbon capture and blue hydrogen and all those types of things. And all that cool stuff is happening in Houston. And so this is the idea where I say, if government just kind of gets out of the way, gets the politics out of the way, about this a narrative that we're trying to create, man, there's a lot of opportunity that can happen, and that's the idea of leveraging things that are our challenges, or leveraging the kind of challenges that we face to
I mean
really help
that
us come
sounds
out.
great, but we all know that's not going to happen right now, especially with who's in the White House. President Trump wants to be involved in everything rather than getting out of the way. And show me a Republican who's not okay with that.
Look, I don't. I mean, I think do I think it's right? No. Do I
Yeah.
think are there challenges to that? Absolutely. I mean, I think there are things. So what is the other counter argument? The counter argument to that is that you don't think about international trade at all. We are a binational. We are a state that has got a binational border that is
Right.
we by whatever happened. Let's be honest. The tariffs on Mexico, frankly, and all the things that are happening around global trade are going to have a huge economic development impact for our state. That's the dirty little secret that nobody's talking about. Let's say the quiet part out loud, right? That is the quiet part out loud. And so the thing is that we can continue, we can put our head in the sand and say we don't want global trade, we don't want to think about climate and energy. Frankly, that's actually not smart business sense. The smart business sense would be, say, as a state like ours, we have an international border that is highly integrated in logistics and mobility and trade. Look at El Paso, look at Brownsville, look at Laredo. All those communities are highly tied to the border community. And we've got centers like Houston and the Permian Basin and others that are the centers of what the next generation of energy development is. And so one of the things that we got to hope for maybe is some courage of our local state leaders to maybe push the politics aside and say, look, maybe we're willing to play in this space and have some pushback. I will say this. There has been some pushback. So for instance, if you listen to the president's State of the Union joint address to Congress, it wasn't State of the Union, he called for the elimination of the CHIPS Act. You guys remember this, right? He says it's a total waste of money, it's a total scam. Well, interesting enough, the state of Texas has been a huge recipient of the CHIPS
Act. Sure.
And by the way, the state of Texas also has its own CHIPS Fund Act, right? And interesting enough, if you talk to state, there is a quiet part, there are a group of local conservative leaders in the state of Texas that have said, CHIPS is really important to us. It's really important to the future of us. And so some there's some senses of courage when it comes to some of that. But again, I think you've got we have to think about what is the economic future look like? The economic future is this, y'all. It's pretty simple. It is thinking about new energy transition or whatever that may be. And do we want to continue to be the center of energy? If we are the center of energy, then that means that we're going to have to wrap our hands around some of the innovations that are happening in that space, batteries, et cetera. It's the center of chip mobility, right? And chip development. Look at what's happening in Taylor, Texas, CHIPS Act, et cetera. So that means we got to do better kind of workforce development type of work. And it's probably thinking about how do we mitigate some of the risks that come with them, the trade issues that we're facing in a way that is not going to adversely impact our border communities, frankly, which is all the places that, frankly, a lot of times have been left behind from an economic development standpoint in the state for a really long time.
And Stephen, you all make the argument in here too that, you know, there's some subtle warnings or maybe even not so subtle warnings about, hey, if you don't turn this corner, I mean, industry is already turning the corner, and we're not talking about, these aren't known as liberal industries when you start talking about the petrochemical industry. Some of them are investing in new cleaner technologies and so forth, and they're already, you know, that train's already left the station, and basically you're telling politicians, hey, get on board or kind of get out of the way of that and let it be. And if you don't, somebody else will become the leader in these technologies, and some other place will be the energy capital of the world, and you may lose many or most of the 650,000 fossil fuel jobs. That's a staggering figure here in Texas, and you believe that that is directly at risk if we don't, believes that that's directly at risk.
I do, and I also think but it's not just about the state leaders, right? I mean, so one of the things I think we're doing right is putting too much emphasis on our state capital, right? In terms of our legislature that meets every other year, frankly. Mm-hmm. It is also, I think, about putting the emphasis back on our local leaders and frankly, our private sector community, right? To be able to better tell that story. You know, so for instance, let's talk about talk about energy, for instance. Energy is a sector that is crucial to who we are as a state. There's economic opportunity there. But that's an industry that hasn't really done a very good job of telling its complete story, right? It is kowtowed a little bit, right? Think about all the discussion right now around incentives around the development of battery plants and things that are happening right now in the discussion of in the legislature. And should we incentivize them or not incentivize them? And there's a lot of folks that are saying, why would we want to do that? It's really bad for all of our big fossil fuel kind of companies like the BPs and the Chevrons of et cetera of the world. The funny story is that if you pull back the curtains, once these things are developed and once they are in process, who ends up owning them?
Mm-hmm.
The big fossil fuel companies.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's you know, most of them frankly owned by BP in the state of Texas. And so that's the thing where I don't think, you know, and that's just, I'm not picking on the energy sector, but the energy sector alone is one of those places that have got to do a better job of just communicating the narrative. And I do look at like some of the things that are happening, like with that Houston initiative that I mentioned, they are trying to do that. They could do more. But it is a need to realize it's the idea of trying to get the politics outside of the economic development. And look, it's really hard when you sometimes have a group of legislatures that just come for the social media clicks and things. And that makes, there's a difference between politics and policymaking, as I tell my students, right? And unfortunately, sometimes we get so focused on the politics that we forget that we're there to do really good policy for the state.
This is a 35-page report, and you guys laid out, I mean, you know, word for word here throughout the report. What kind of reaction have you had from local leaders, from industry leaders, and from policymakers?
Good. There's a lot of good things that are moving out of this plan. I think when you look at the stuff around, so the cool thing about this plan, right? There are things that Republicans and Democrats can agree about, right? So workforce development, a really great place. I think the state's making some really good efforts there. It was awesome to see The governor put forth that workforce development is a priority for him. He talked about CTE programs, doubling back down on community colleges. We write about that. We, you know, their support there. There's support around the child care work that we, Jason, that you and I have chatted about for. We can see that work moving along. You know, I think when you think about the issues around land use, for instance, I actually think what's going to happen with land use and housing is that the state may come it just as a hunch. I suspect that the state will come down a little bit harder than localities actually probably want on that. And that's partly, and I'll say this to my local friends, partly that's because localities are to blame for that a little bit, partly because they just kind of sat on the sideline and didn't do enough, right?
When you say land use, you're talking about allowing people who own lots to build, you know, bigger houses or more
exactly.
houses in the back or
smaller
stuff like
lot
that, right?
Sizes, parking,
which would increase, yeah,
processes,
increase the amount of housing.
Type of things. So generally speaking, I think there are a lot of things that we see that are happening there. In terms of localities, good. I mean, I think when you look at our group of people that were involved in it, you know, there are certain cities that are doing more around certain pieces of this than others. But generally the response has been good.
Good.
I mean, I don't think there's anything in that report that is there's nothing in there that should be surprising, right? The report is just to say, look, to your point earlier, we've been a place that has been all about low growth, low cost, you know, high growth, low cost, and a different type of economic development has got to happen in the state if we really, really want to compete.
Stephen, you know, you talk a lot about the Texas Triangle in this report, which is, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth down to Houston, over to San Antonio, up through Austin, and how that is a huge powerhouse economically. I didn't realize this. It says that there's $1.2 billion in annual output from that area alone, and that the economy just in that Texas Triangle is comparable to that of Mexico or Spain, which I wasn't aware that it was that extraordinary. Talk a little bit about how important making sure that continues is, because I think a lot of people just go, well, you know, it's done this well so far. Maybe we just leave it alone and, you know, just kind of put it on autopilot and let it keep driving. We don't need, you know, blueprints and to do different things. It'll be fine.
I think it is. I'm not going to tell you the comment I would say out loud because I would get a lot of email on this. But without the Texas Triangle, right, Texas could be Mississippi or Alabama in terms of its economic output, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just be real honest about that, right? It is the knowledge center. It is not to say that I don't, you know, I grew up as a Beaumont kid. I understand the importance mm-hmm. of all of our state and everything that it is. But the economic powerhouse of the state is in the Texas Triangle. And so that means you got to fuel innovation. You got to get your research institution, continue to do all the things around research institutions, you know, all of those types of things that matter. And you can't kind of lose sight of that, right? You got to continue to kind of have this high growth mentality around what drives innovation. I will say just something, you know, Jason, you brought up the Trump administration and what worries me the most about the Trump administration. So one of the things, so the tariffs are an issue. Yes, that the issue around energy and climate, you know, the thing that really kind of that worries me, and it, you know, we've heard a lot about DOGE and the cuts of federal workers and what does that mean and blah, 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 blah. And it's written about as ad nauseum. But the interesting thing that no one's really written about is that what happens when the federal government dials back its investments in innovation? And our Texas Triangle has been really, really beneficial for that. NIH grants, DOD dollars, a capital factory and others, Army Futures Command. I go on and on about the list of the amount of dollars. And if you ask me, like, what's one of the things that we should be really concerned about, it's the idea that the federal government may decide that in addition to doing tariffs and addition to kind of thinking about how the implications about immigration, it just says, you know what, we're going to spend less on R&D. We're going to spend less in NIH dollars. We're going to spend less on CHIPS dollars. We're going to pull back on the IRA and those types of things where you kind of see and that's a real worrisome sign. That could be really worrisome for the Texas Triangle, because part of the growth of that region has been really centered around innovation. Name me one economy in that collection of economies that hasn't been able to tap into new federal place-based initiatives or dollars that flow through our universities. And that's I think that's a real challenge. And I would hope that as we talk about what does our state leaders do and what does our congressional delegation do and our folks that are spending time in Washington do, really accelerating and asking, you know, telling the Trump administration that, look, what we've done is what we do as a federal government in incentivizing and accelerating research. There's a great study from the Federal Reserve Bank out of Dallas that says the thing about federal dollars is it catalyzes commercial private sector dollars. Every dollar spent by the feds, it's $3 that go in through commercialization. And so that to me is the biggest, that is the biggest worrisome. If you dial back that, man, the sweet playbook of what has been Texas and what has been the United States as a whole, that is the secret sauce. Like you asked me the secret sauce, that is the secret sauce. And if you dial that back a little bit, that could be a big word. That to me is pretty worrisome.
Well, what would happen if that was dialed back? Because that's certainly a possibility with Elon Musk going through, you know, and auditing every department and every dollar spent.
Hello, China. Like, hello, other places, right? I mean, I just say, I mean, if America's going to succeed, it's look, as we know, right? Innovation's not going to, there are two things I think that happen. One is that innovation does not slow down. So someone else just takes your plate at the table, right?
And
someone
another else, country.
So, or yeah, exactly. Becomes a different person. Or the other idea that we start to see is that, and I don't know this, is that do we start to make large scale economic development investments? Do we pick winners and losers? And we're kind of starting to see some of that with the Trump administration, frankly. You know, look at Oracle and Stargate and all those. Those are friends of the president and friends of the administration that have won won those issues. And what that does is that is a different type of innovation. It takes place in collaboration out of the picture. So you can hate the Biden administration. You can bullshit. You can say IRA was bullshit. The EDA was bullshit. All those types of things. But the coolest thing what the Biden administration did is they said that local, public, and private really matter. And if you want to get those dollars, you have to tap into those and create those collaborations. And without that, who knows? I don't know. I mean, I think it's something to be really worried about.
Yeah, because you mentioned hello China. You know, China's not slowing down. It's still pumping a ton of money into research and development, and that is a huge competitor across the ocean there. I wanted to ask you this. So for this Texas Metropolitan Blueprint, you all, you know, represented all 26 of the metro areas around Texas. You had 175 people involved in this, from business to government to nonprofits, et cetera, people of all stripes politically. And I'm wondering, you know, it's amazing when you think of people sitting down and discussing something and coming to agreement on things, especially when they differ politically, because we don't see that in our political discourse anymore these days. You know, were there fights? Were there arguments? Was there a more of a collaborative feel?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there were there was absolutely kind of discussion about, you know, points of view and perspective for sure. So let me just say this. The document, as it's developed, is the thought leadership of the folks that were the authors on the page, right? What we did is we tried to tap into what were kind of leaders in the field that could impact our work. So we own the ideas, but at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, so I'll give you an example. There was a really valid discussion about the idea of local control as it relates to land use, right? Mm-hmm. And man, when you start talking local control, you get some interesting bed buddies. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when it comes to like workforce development and incentives, man, we want the state to stay out of the way, and we want the localities to do it. But then you get the YIMBY crowd, which typically hates conservative government or not in align with government, and say, man, we want you to bring the hammer down on localities to force them to do more development and all the things that the YIMBY crowd wants. So you get some interesting bedfellows. So when it came to land use, for instance, that's a really great example where there was not a lot. There was not. Perfect consensus on that, right? Where it was the idea of like, how do you deliver on lot size reform? Should that be a state mandated issue? Should that come top down, or should that be incentivized, right? There's definitely some disagreements on those types of things.
Last question I have for you, Stephen. Can Texas afford not to implement any of these ideas on economic development, on land use, on workforce development, AI, infrastructure? It seems every one of these is a very important puzzle piece to the future of the state.
For sure. Particularly if you want to be a high growth, high value state, right? That's the idea, right? So Texas for such a long time has been a high growth state, right? We create jobs, become the engine, everybody moves here. The thing that I hope we have is we start to say, you know what, we want to have a point of view, a better, stronger view about our point of view or our growth. We want high value growth, right? We don't want to just be growth for growth's sake. Growth for growth's sake just creates a bunch of challenges. It creates all the stuff that we're having to deal with, right?
Right.
And so, which is, you know, all the things that we've rattled through for the last 25 minutes. And so a point of view around growth is extremely important. And that's one of the things we try to put forth is that high value growth, growth with a point of view that puts Texans first, that allows us to address those externalities, mean that we actually have to start to move policies forward that are good for both, you know, the residents that live there, the businesses that are there as well. The last thing I would say about this, one of the things I really hope that we are able to do is remove or try to get past where cities and the city government and state legislature did this all the time, right? They fight like a little bit of like fighting like kids. And that's not really that beneficial, right? That's not really, that doesn't help us achieve the problems.
Right.
The question really is, how can the city government and state government come together to kind of solve some of these issues? And more importantly, from my perspective, local and county leadership are on the ground, boots on the ground all the time, engage the private sector to do that. I think it's the view of the state leaders to kind of try to support that as best as possible. But again, that means we got to put politics aside and maybe do more policymaking together.
Well, I'll finish with this. We know that a lot of local leaders listen to this podcast, and a lot of legislators listen to this podcast and have been on this podcast. I'm sure that Governor Abbott is listening right now. What do you say to
them? I'm not
them?
A woke professor.
And that's the last word. No, what do you say to them, those who are listening here, if they're considering these things, if they're listening to you, if they're looking at what your blueprint lays out? How long do we have if we sit on the sidelines with some of these bigger issues that you all have laid out in the blueprint? What if we only tackle, you know, one or two of them and we kind of, you know, haphazardly go about it and we don't really think this through? How long do we have before the quote unquote Texas miracle starts to really sour?
Well, the question is already souring a little bit, right? I mean, you talk to some Texans. Texans will say to you now that, man, I'm not sure this growth model is really working for us. There was a great Texas Lyceum poll that found that 7 in 10 Texans now believe that Texas has become unaffordable for their family, right? And so to me, that signals that maybe the growth model isn't working for them. So that means we've got to change our model. We got to kind of change what we're doing, which means going back, doing all those things we talked about, value-based skill development, thinking about more housing development. And look, I think it, you know, if you're not, if we're not moving this along and changing this needle in 5, 6, 7 years, we're probably talking about a different type of Texas. Look, Texas is an interesting place. We are the place that wants to be everything that California is not. Right? Unfortunately,
yeah, that's brought up a lot. Yeah.
Right. We talk about, we don't want to be California. We don't want to be a place of congestion and unaffordability and those types of things. So let's not do what California did, right? Which is let's proactively try to tackle the issues while we have a chance to tackle the issues, rather than having to go back and try to unwind all the mess that's there. Right? And that's my message, that if we don't want to be Californians, well, let's be Texans and let's try to tackle the issues now while they're in front of us, not while we're trying to dig ourselves out of the hole.
Stephen, I love that you guys pull the politics out of what needs to be done all the time, man. Always glad to have you on, and I love the summer cut. I've been trying to get Wheeler to cut his hair, but he won't let anybody get near his hair.
Barbershop once a week, every week.
Yeah?
I'm not cool enough to pull that off, though.
That's
you know
true.
Why I do it? My husband tells me I do it because it hides all the gray hair, man. It makes me not look like.
Oh, Jason, you ought to consider that then.
I know.
I know. If I had the Jason haircut, I'd look a lot like you, Jason, with the gray hair.
I need to start dyeing my hair now, I think.
We need to use last names here. He's talking to Whiteley there. Talking to Whiteley, for sure.
Stephen, always appreciate it, buddy. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.